Hello and welcome to the Aesthetic Insider Show. I'm so excited because today I have a world-renowned dermatologist, Serena Meraz. Dr. Meraz is a board-certified, as I said, dermatologist. She is a clinical researcher and she practices in the Northern Bay Area of California. Serena, welcome to Aesthetic Insider. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here.
We're going to talk today about the microbiome and its effect on the skin, obviously, as Dr. Meraz is a dermatologist, and that is really one of the kind of big things that she has done a lot of research, lots of studies, and I have actually seen Dr. Serena do lots of presentations on this particular subject, and so she's clearly an expert. I'm so excited. But before we get going on discussing the microbiome and its effect on the skin, Serena, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself, your background, and kind of how we arrived here today?
Great. Happy to. So as you said, I'm a board-certified dermatologist practicing in Northern California, kind of the wine region in and around Napa Valley. Prior to getting boarded in dermatology, I got boarded in internal medicine. So I still have an interest in the individual as a whole. Over the years, I have, I guess, begun to appreciate the differences between, you know, patients coming in for wellness and rejuvenation and those with true disease. And I'm trying to kind of bridge the gap and look for these missing links. My interest in the microbiome really started a while ago, probably over 10 years ago. And it was a very serendipitous situation. I had kids in high school. One of my kids had a science teacher who was teaching a different class, but, you know, said, "Hey, your mom's a dermatologist. Would you ask her to come speak to the class about the skin?" So I said, "Sure, I'd be happy to." A couple of days beforehand, he says, "Oh, by the way, do you mind adding in some information about the microbiome?" Microbiome. I knew a little bit about the microbiome, but of course that kind of prompted me to do a little deep dive. At that time, there was not nearly as much information as there is now, but it certainly was enough to intrigue me and kind of prompt my interest in the importance of the microbiome with health, with skin, with wellness. I really enjoy wellness and helping make other people's lives, you know, richer, more fulfilling, more, you know, basically people look better when they're healthier. Yeah. So this entire journey has kind of, started from a little serendipity with, let's look into this microbiome business. The more I learned, the more I wanted to learn. And you know, the information has been certainly coming out in droves over the past decade, I would say. We're still at the tip of the iceberg. We still don't understand everything by any means about the microbiome. But I love the fact that this journey has been, you know, interesting and is something that we can appreciate and incorporate into everyday practice.
You know what I find interesting is the fact that it was a school teacher.
I know. Of all the irony, it wasn't even my son's class. It was a different class. Yeah. And, you know, I basically, it's like the microbiome. I mean, I know about Demodex. I'm a dermatologist in the association with rosacea. But obviously, it's so much more complex than that. And that was really just kind of the launching point to start me reading and getting very, very interested in all the science that has been, you know, coming out in droves over the past decade. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, for me, my personal interest in the microbiome has always been kind of on a digestive, you know, level and the whole, the gut, you know, and I have a keen interest in health and fitness, wellness, and of course, aesthetics. That's kind of how we met. But I, you know, one thing I think I really learned through you, and I didn't really understand it or know of it, is because, again, my background of reading and a microbiome has all been related to the inner microbiome. And of course, you know, we know digestion, you know, does affect the skin. If your digestive system is clogged, it's going to come out on your skin. But, you know, learning through you is we also have an external microbiome.
And we do indeed. Yeah, so we literally have trillions of microorganisms that live, as you say, in our gut. They live in our mouth. They live on our skin. They're in our eyes, our nose, you know, private parts, etc. They're everywhere. And in fact, the microbes that are on us and in us outnumber our own innate cells, you know, by more than 10 to 1. Not only do they outnumber our own cells, but they control our cells. They actually control probably the epigenome, which, what is the epigenome? We have DNA, and how that DNA becomes expressed or not is very dependent on the epigenome and these external factors. So the microbiome plays a key role with immunity, with health, with, you know, basically how our skin's looking, every internal organ. The fact is that we have microbiome, of course, in every crevice. There does seem to be, you know, either parts and or microbiota, even little in the bloodstream. And more recent studies have even shown that the microbiome somehow gets into mother's milk with breastfeeding women. So the microbiome and is part of that immune system that is passed on to an infant early in life. It's more than that. It's, you know, basically holding the baby, passing it on through the skin. I mean, the skin does end up being really the third largest reservoir of the microbiota. And as we know, our skin is an organ. It is important in immune regulation. And the microbiota plays a very key role in basically helping our skin and our immune system and our lungs internally, et cetera, to kind of develop immunity, keep immunity, and again, control all these other cellular processes, which are so key with health and or disease. So, you know, obviously we want to steer things towards health rather than disease. So keeping our microbiome healthy internally, on the skin, and everywhere else, I think is key.
You know, that is interesting. I mean, I didn't realize, even like you say, a mom, you know, passes the, you know, her microbiome to a baby through the milk, but also through touch. So
yes. So in the act of holding the baby is important. The act of, you know, I think back to, you know, my mother said, oh, you know, way back there was this whole like bra burning thing, and basically women wanted to be free from breastfeeding, and formula came out, and they said, well, formula is better than breast milk. And of course, everybody knows, unless you're living under a rock right now, that was probably not the case. And, you know, there are things that are not in formula, for instance, you know, this passive immunity, this microbiota, I think holding, you know, skin to skin contact with an infant, that actually plays such key roles early in life for that fixed microbiota that will set them up, you know, lifelong, actually. So a lot of the microbiota actually, I mean, it starts during birth, but it continues on, and those first years are actually so key, but it's the lifelong journey that is important as well. So we do have a part of the microbiome that is very malleable, that changes every single day. It changes with every action, with every lifestyle choice that we make or don't make. And it drives a lot of, you know, our health and wellness. So starting out with a good microbiome early is good, but the journey needs to continue on throughout life.
So, as you say, you know, we start out, if we're fortunate enough to have been breastfed, then you start out with, you know, a more robust microbiome, which will carry us forward in life. So, what can we do to maintain and continue to keep both the internal and the external microbiome strong and healthy?
So I think there are five kind of key lifestyle factors that have been proven to extend life and quality of life, and those are diet, exercise, getting enough sleep, don't smoke, don't drink too much. All five of those factors actually affect the microbiome. So not only are they good for other reasons, but they affect the microbiome. There are a couple things that I add to that. And if you look at the blue zones, so there are five places in the world described by a National Geographic reporter, Dan Buettner, who, Okinawa, Japan, Icaria, Greece, Sardinia, Italy, Nicoya Peninsula, Costa Rica, and Loma Linda, California. All those places, it's diet, it's exercise, it's all the things that I mentioned. In addition to that, one of the key things that has the strongest correlation with longevity, and not just longevity, but health span, so good quality of life, is close community, personal connections, having a lifestyle that has regular interaction with other human beings. And we know, why is this important? Well, we can relate this back to the microbiome. When we all have literally a cloud of microbiota around us. And this cloud has been shown to extend about 3 feet. I think of us like Pigpen in Peanuts, right? We've got this cloud of microorganisms. Of course, we can't see these, but they exist. And we actually leave a little footprint of these wherever we go, which is pretty interesting. When we are around other people, other human beings, that they have a cloud as well. And there is this exchange of microbiota. And that's actually a great thing because it helps improve diversity of the skin microbiome. I think it's one of the best things we can do for the skin microbiome. What happened during the, recent COVID pandemic? Everybody was told to stay at least 6 feet away. So there was no exchange of microbiota. People were, isolating themselves. There was no exchange of microbiota. I have seen so many, particularly older patients who I've seen over the years, on a regular basis. Some of these folks were so afraid to leave their home. They had no interaction with other people. And the profound acceleration of aging over, 2, 3 years was striking and stunning and extremely sad. And I do believe that
Nothing,
a good part of that was the lack of exchange. Their skin microbiota, their entire microbiota actually suffered as a result of isolation. So isolation, I think, is not healthy for any of us, for so many reasons, but there is a physical reason with regard to the microbiota. Diverse microbiome is always healthier than, a more smaller diversity microbiome. So it is important to be around other people. I think it's important to be around other, positive people as well.
Good energy, right? You want the good energy people.
You want the good energy people. You do. You do. There's been this description of a gut-brain axis. And we know from research that the microbes in our gut, even though they don't cross the blood-brain barrier, their metabolites, many of their metabolites do, and they can affect us in a positive or a negative way. Additionally, these microbes in our gut actually communicate to the brain through the vagus nerve. So there is a lot with, mental health and the connection to the gut microbiome. I think we're going to discover that there's a skin-brain axis as well. And why do I say that? I think that being around other positive people actually, you know, it makes us happier when we are out in nature with the microbes, helping our microbiome. We are happier when we're around our dogs, who are actually great distributors of the microbiome. It elevates our mood. So I do think that there is this skin-brain axis as well as the gut-brain axis. And, you know, we're global human beings, so it's hard to, like, separate organs and say that, oh, only this is important or only that's important.
You know, the human body is just fascinating, isn't it? You know, and I don't think as humans we actually give credit to what we have when you think about it. You know, I mean, it's even, you know, like, you know, no, I think there is more of a trend moving towards things like just, you know, not just being out in nature, but actually putting your feet on the grass or putting in the ocean or on the sand, or, you know, it's to really touch the earth and ground yourself. And I'm sure, like you said, the whole microbiome of other energies and things just...
It has been shown that doing exactly what you said, being in nature, actually touching things, does improve our microbiome diversity and on our skin, certainly. And you know, I think that relates to better well-being.
So I have a question about, you know, this, you know, during the pandemic and just isolation in general. I mean, some people like to isolate. And I think we're actually seeing a big trend. I mean, just with, you know, people working from home, kids playing video games, you know, there's kind of a lot of isolation taking place, regardless of, you know, whatever is happening on the health front in the world. What do you feel with the prediction of you know, like you said, these patients appear to have aged, accelerated 3 years, 2 to 3 years. Was that a general appearance? Was that in their overall health? Did their skin look older, you know, than, like, just tell me more about them.
I mean, I would say all of the above. The skin certainly looks worse. I mean, the entire being was more aged. And some of these patients, not all, but some of these patients actually developed a disease like cancer or other things, which who knows if they would have developed that anyway. But I think that isolation is very detrimental. And I'm not saying that we have to be around other human beings 24 hours a day. You know, I see patients all day. And I feel so privileged to have that regular contact. But I have moments that I just want to chill by myself, not talk, not be around other human beings. So I think a little balance is fine. But I do think that sitting in front of a computer all day, not having regular contact with other human beings is detrimental. And I think that we will discover that it is a risk factor for chronic disease, for accelerated aging, for general lack of health, because it does decrease, you know, again, diversity of the microbiome, kind of keeping things fresh is important for our overall health.
You know what I'd like to talk about is, because, you know, we talk about the internal microbiome and then the external microbiome. And so, you know, the external microbiome makes me think about, you know, we know, I mean, the skin is, I think it's the largest organ in the human.
It is.
And so really, like, anything we put on our skin, you know, is not just being absorbed into the body, but it's also affecting the microbiome on the skin. And so, you know, in from an internal point of view, what can somebody do to make their outer appearance, you know, like foods, drinks, you know, you did say don't smoke, don't, you know, alcohol, you know, other things that we know affect us. But is there, you know, anything, any tips that you give to your patients, you know, to really improve their overall wellness as well, with the intent of, you know, I want my skin to be glowing?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, going to the basics, fresh, natural food is always the way to go. I tell my patients, you know, heavy on the vegetables, get a little fruit into the diet. There are a lot of micronutrients. We don't want, you know, tons of sugar. In fact, sugar causes glycation and breakdown of the collagen. It's, you know, not so good. It's impossible probably to avoid any sugar, but even, you know, fruit has sugar, obviously. A little bit released slowly that your body can take care of is probably fine, but minimizing sugar. You know, big, big time, we've had this infiltration of processed foods into America. And processed foods, particularly highly processed foods, are really, really detrimental. So anything that has preservatives, and pretty much all processed food has preservatives to keep it on the shelf for ages and ages without going bad. If you have, I tell people, look, if you've got a huge jar of mayonnaise from Costco that doesn't go bad for 2 years in your refrigerator, just think about what it's inhibiting in your gut. There are preservatives that are really antibiotics and antimicrobials that are keeping things from growing in the refrigerator, but they're also keeping all your good microorganisms from doing what they need to do in your gut. So generally, staying away from processed foods, I think, is huge. There was a big study looking at emulsifiers and the detrimental effect of those. I think most emulsifiers, which are things that keep foods from separating, you know, a classic example that I think of is peanut butter. You buy peanut butter, you should get a little oil, layer of oil on the top. If you buy, I don't know, one of these types that just sits there, it doesn't separate.
No battery.
It's just not good. So these are, taking care of our gut microbiome is so, so important. Now, recently, you know, there were a couple from Stanford where I trained who, the Sonnenbergs, Justin and Erica, looked at the, you know, high fiber diets and fermented foods. And I think they went in with the thought that, you know, high fiber is kind of all you need. What they found, which I think was a little bit of a surprise, is that fermented foods are so helpful for the gut microbiome. So they actually improve diversity. They have a very positive effect on immunity by, you know, decreasing like IL-6, which is bad inflammatory cytokine. And the immune system is so important for overall health, of course, but also skin beauty and health as well. So the group that ate probiotic foods or for fermented foods actually had a much greater diversity in their gut microbiome and all these positive immune responses. And this was, you know, much better than just kind of high fiber foods alone. Now, I'm not telling people not to eat high fiber foods. I think that the fiber is important for these, you know, good microbes to actually use and make good metabolites from. I think you need both. Like with everything in life, there's a lot of work and we really need to do everything. And there's nothing more important, I tell my patients, than your health and your well-being. So it is worth making the effort to just get the right foods into your diet. What are fermented foods? So fermented foods, there are a lot of milk product foods. For instance, yogurt, kefir, some cottage cheese is, you know, without preservatives and still has good active microbes. Cheese, you know, it's interesting. Everybody thinks cheese is so bad, but natural cheese that will actually, you know, mold in your refrigerator over time if you don't eat it, that contains active cultures. And there was a study showing that cheese eaters actually had better cardiac health than non-cheese eaters. So why would that be? Everybody thinks, well, cheese is full of fat and cholesterol. Well, the fact is that it also has active microbes. And so eating things with active microbes, I think, is so beneficial. Other things, kombucha, tempeh, natto, fermented vegetables. These are all good sources of probiotic. And, you know, the apple cider vinegar with the mother, you know, intact. Yeah. That is not, these are just good things to consume on a regular basis. It's interesting because in our dermatology literature, we've now shown, you know, we've had this taboo against milk products, especially with acne. Well, it's non-fermented milk products that seem to be detrimental, whereas the fermented milk products like the yogurt, the cheese, et cetera, actually seem to have a positive effect. So, you know, after learning this, I mean, I'm making a concerted effort myself to try to, yeah, just a little bit of several types of fermented products in my diet on a daily basis. It's certainly harder when you travel. Kombucha is often easier to get, but, you know, just trying to make as much effort as possible to get a little bit in every day. And I think this is super, super beneficial for us.
Yeah, it's interesting, as you said, especially with travelers. I mean, it is you go to airports and airport food is better than it used to be, but it still is you're hard pressed. Are you, you know, in a hotel, hotel food is so highly salted and, you know, many, many other things. It's really just not good for you to eat that so often. But in terms of fermented foods, I think that's something, even if you add it in small quantities, is that beneficial? I mean, because I think, you know, you could.
I mean, a lot of my patients, when I talk to them about eating fermented food, they say, oh, I don't like that. Like, okay, well, I mean, I don't like not feeling well. So, you know, your nose. A lot of these things you actually get used to. You know, there's a Japanese fermented food called natto, and probably most of the listeners have not tried natto. I have heard about natto for years. It has genistein, which is a phytoestrogen compound. It's good for the bones. It's, you know, these women in Okinawa like live forever. They don't get breast cancer. They don't get osteoporosis. They don't get any diseases. I think I need to try natto. Well, the first time I just kept hearing about how horrible it is. And the first time I tried it, I was like, okay, I can kind of understand that there's a textural issue with it. But it does, you know, it comes with little packets, or you can get it with little packets of a vinaigrette and a mustard. And it actually becomes kind of tasty and delicious over time. So the point is, I think your taste buds can kind of accommodate to different foods, and there's definitely a biofeedback. You know, when you feel better, you can associate that with the taste, and maybe you learn to like foods that you didn't love when you first tried, right?
You know, it's interesting because I've always been, well, not always, but I've always had a fascination in interest in health, in fitness, in nutrition. And still do. And so I know for me, it's like, and I love salads. I just love to eat green salads. And I would go home back to England. I mean, you know, it's availability of fresh produce and fresh foods is so much more than it used to be, you know, when I would previously go back many years ago. But I would come back to, you know, here in California, where, we, you know, it's just lots of greens everywhere you look. But I would crave, you know, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm like craving a salad. And I know it's because my body is just so used to it. It misses it. Or the reaction I have if I end up having to eat a sandwich in the airport, you know, I can feel it in me. And I just, you know, so I can't, sometimes I think about people who choose not to pay attention to what they're eating, which is kind of why we have such an obesity, you know, epidemic in the United States and worldwide now, like you said, with the fast food industry. But it's like, how can you not want to feel good?
Exactly. It's Exactly. I mean, nothing tastes better than feeling good, right?
Yeah,
And
exactly.
I'm completely with you. Living in California, we're a little spoiled in that regard. I think that when I travel to other states or other countries often, I will say that my first trip to England, which was many, many years ago, I craved vegetables and I just couldn't get enough. And the first thing I did when I left England was just buy a bunch of vegetables and ate them because they were hard to come by. It's much easier in recent years to come by vegetables in England, which I'm very grateful for because it's
Thankfully.
Yes, thankfully.
Well, when you talk about preservatives in foods, I was on a trip in to Mexico several years ago, and I came across actually a skincare line, and it was a lady in Guadalajara who basically formulates her own skincare. And she had a spa in Guadalajara, and she had another one in this little village called Ajijic, which is on Lake Chapala. And I found her little spa in Ajijic. And so I, love skincare and love, all of this and beauty industry. So I went into the spa and, had a chat with her and tried, purchased some products just to try them. And I loved the products. And so I said to her, you ever can I get these in the United States? And she said, no, we only distribute in Mexico. So I said, why? And she said, wouldn't I'm sure these products would go down really well in the United States. And she said, because it's mandatory for me to send my products to Mexico, is that I have to put a preservative in them that they will preserve for a minimum of 6 months on the shelf. And I had no idea that that was a requirement of in many skincare products here. And so saying that as a dermatologist, and even in our aesthetic industry, I mean, there are many medical grade products, and then just across the board, I mean, there's millions of topical skincare products for all different types of things. Some, of course, that are necessary in terms of inflammation or, like you said, psoriasis or eczema and, rosacea. But how do you feel about really what we rub into our skin on a daily basis? Is there any recommendations that you can give to our listeners in an audience as to what should we be looking out for in just beauty products?
Yes.
What should we stay away from?
Well, yeah, the point about the preservatives, of course, we want to avoid preservatives in our gut. And ideally, having products for our skin that were preservative free, I think would be great. However, they're just not really available in the US. I think the focus has been more on kind of postbiotic effects here. Again, doing what we can with regards to nature being around other people. I think keeping the skin pH lower as we age, we tend to get this creep of the skin pH and more youthful, healthier skin with more, moisturization, hyaluronic acid, et cetera, tends to have a little lower pH. So what does that mean? A lower pH, or skin tends to have an acidic pH in general. So skin pH generally ranges from 4 up to a maximum of maybe 7. If you get into the basic range, 7 is neutral. If you get above 7, you're in basic territory. A lot of the good microbes on the skin, your lactobacillus, bifidobacterium, which are in our gut as well, those tend to make a lot of lactic acid. And the lactic acid actually creates a lower pH on our skin. It's a major contributing factor. So having, healthier, intact skin, we think of fiber as kind of a prebiotic in the gut. Well, moisturization is kind of a prebiotic on the skin. I do think there's a lot less known about the effects of these preservatives that we are using on the skin. And I am a little, I'm a dermatologist, so I'm a skincare junkie, if you will. I'm kind of putting everything on my skin all the time. But I do think that if we feed our skin, even with these preservatives, with basically things that will have a ligand effect on our fibroblasts and therefore, help our skin quality, it will probably help our microbiome. I think there is a little chicken and egg thing with the microbiome and health. So everything we can do to keep our skin healthy and robust from the inside and from the outside is super important. Some of my personal favorite ingredients, if you will, exosome products, if human exosomes, retinoids are, of course, a standby for years and years and years, peptides, vitamin C, but making sure you have a good moisturizer in your regimen as well, and sun protection. I do like physical blockers versus, a lot of the high chemical ingredient sunblocks.
Yeah, well,
So
I know you're.
hopefully I'll have a little better answer for you in a few years with that, but and maybe more choices, but we have to do what we do at this point in time.
Well, I know you're a big outdoors person, as am I. And it's kind of funny when I go hiking with my friends, is they think I'm a fashion show because I have the hat, the glasses, the scarf, the glove. I mean, long sleeves and long pants, and then I've got sunscreen on too. And then at first it's like, why do you get so dressed up to go hiking? It's like, I'm not dressed up, I'm just covered up.
Protecting, right?
I'm not trying to be a fashion show, but I just don't look like I'm not out there with a sleeveless t-shirt or no hat. It's just, it's kind of funny anyway. So I had to throw that in, like, because you said full coverage, and you really do need the
Yes.
full coverage to kind of just keep the skin looking beautiful, as much as you can, or keeping it, no sun damage or skin cancer. Yeah, anyway, sounds amazing. I think there's so much we do, like you said, that we don't know. But we know a lot more than we used to, and there really is such a trend now, and there's so much conversation taking place about the microbiome, and I think the human body, of course, is amazing. And so hopefully any preservatives that, we're getting more goodness out of the products, and the body is able to, with a robust microbiome, take care of whatever preservatives and, they're not or not to have an effect from them. So now, in terms of what about exfoliation? Does exfoliation, how do you feel about exfoliation? And this dry rubbing's a big thing now. A
Yes.
dry brushing, I guess, is what it's called.
Dry brushing. So I truthfully, I think exfoliating the skin feels good. It makes the skin feel better. I am a proponent of it, but I haven't seen a lot of data on how that affects the microbiome specifically. But I do think it's important to do things that make us feel better. And there's some data we know with men, for instance, who shave their faces on a daily basis. We think that that actually helps them age better. That contributes to their positive aging effects on the facial skin, because shaving is basically daily exfoliation, right? So I think as far as, again, skin health, there actually are studies that look at the effects of probiotics taken internally. And when I say probiotics, I should actually step back and tell you another thing I recommend to patients. There have been a couple studies, a few studies actually, showing that consumption of daily probiotic pills usually decreases the diversity of the gut flora. So this is a surprise to a lot of people. So I stress to people that eating fermented foods is far superior as far as what we know in this day and age. There's a huge, huge market for probiotics. And I will tell you that it's rare that I find a patient who is not taking probiotics. And particularly if somebody has to go on antibiotics for some reason, yes, there is. I talk to them about, make sure you get your fermented foods in your diet to restore your gut flora. And they always say, oh, I'm already taking a probiotic. Well, there have been studies showing that actually, even though you're consuming maybe quote unquote good microbes, you consume so many of them that it decreases the gut flora. There was a study looking at the effect of PD-1 inhibitors and gut microbes with regard to melanoma and basically how people did. So people who were taking probiotics actually had a decreased gut diversity, and they did much poorer than people with who had high fiber diets and better gut diversity who weren't taking probiotics. There have been studies showing that people who take take antibiotics and then take probiotics after to try to restore the gut flora, which is what we all think, right? Mm-hmm. It actually is a longer time to restore the gut flora if you're taking probiotic help. So I say toss the probiotics, eat more fermented foods, eat high fiber foods, and you're going to be a lot better off.
Interesting.
And then, you know, there are also kind of back to what this does for the skin. There have been now several studies looking at the effects of a lot of the Bifidobacterium, Lactobacillus strains, which are pretty omnipresent in a lot of these fermented foods. And of course, you can take probiotics, but again, too much is not a good thing. So food sources, I think, are better. And the effects on decreasing metalloproteinases with sun exposure, the effects of increasing elastin production in the skin. So there are definitely concrete endpoints to taking these, you know, consuming these foods in your diet regularly. There's no question about that. But again, everything in moderation. It's kind of like, you know, we all know that exercise is good for you, but there are recent studies that show that excessive exercise, there's a kind of a J curve. If you are doing too much, it actually ends up being detrimental. So I think of it kind of the same with probiotics. When you're taking these really concentrated probiotics day in and day out, it actually decreases diversity of your gut microbiome.
Interesting. So how much exercise is too much exercise? I exercise, but I don't think I do too much.
Yeah, I say. So, you know, the bigger problem in this country is not enough. So people, you know, sitting's the new smoking, right? But I would say that, you know, these marathoners, these ultra marathoners really get too much. So there are devices, you know, the Whoop, the Oura Ring, et cetera, that I think can give you strain scores. And when your strain is far exceeding recovery, it's too much exercise for the day.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's probably the simplest way to assess that.
Yeah. Can you measure, like, is there a test to measure the microbiome internally and externally? Like, you talk about the pH balance on the skin, so I'm sure you can measure the pH balance. And is that the indication that you could do to see what your pH balance is inside and out?
Yeah. So there are tests and there are a lot of companies. And do I personally do any of these? No, I haven't. I think that, you know, what are you going to do with the information? Well, you're going to make some changes to make your lifestyle a little more optimal. I kind of figure, why not make your lifestyle optimal anyway? Right. And one of the caveats to this is I think you can get these readings and then you put on this probiotic and this probiotic. But I kind of think of this as almost going down this rabbit hole of, you know, you've got this health problem, so you're treated with this drug. And then there's a side effect of this drug, and they put you on another drug, and it's just this downward spiral. So why not just, you know, have optimal health habits as much as possible? I mean, none of us are perfect, but if we can kind of, you know, if we veer off a little bit, try to get back on track, these tests actually measure your microbiome at a point in time. Again, there's this probably 60 to 70% of your microbiome is somewhat fixed. Mm-hmm. And then 30 to 40% of it is malleable with lifestyle, with what you're doing. If we get on an airplane and fly across the country, you know, our microbiome changes. And I don't know about you, but I can feel that. You know, you never feel quite as good, or if you're heading off to Europe, long flight, whatever. You've got elevation, you've got all these changes. And I mean, that's when I will actually get a little pimple that breaks out the next day or something, because basically I've created a dysbiosis by getting on that airplane. So does that stop me from getting on an airplane? No. I mean, I need to go places. I want to experience the world. Sometimes you just have to do these things, get back on track. But basically, we want to, you know, as much as possible, I think, optimize our microbiome by doing things that are going to be healthy for our microbiome. So again, these, you know, the diet, the exercise, sleep. There have been several studies showing that altered sleep really does negatively affect the microbiome. Alcohol, certainly. Smoking, no question. I remember, you know, back in the day, seeing these smokers with literally black tongues from bacterial overgrowth. I mean, it was just disgusting, right? Fortunately, at
how
least
you we're, you probably
we're not seeing people smoke anymore. What's that?
Yeah. And how do you, like, stick your tongue out and not think there's something wrong with you if it's black?
Oh, I know. I mean, it's just nicotine is so incredibly addictive. It's which by the way, you know, so is processed food. I think is probably as or more addictive than smoking. Wow. People have a really tough time stopping it, and why is this? And sugar. So when we are growing certain populations in our gut, maybe unhealthy populations even, and you know, say we're a sugar fanatic, we're eating lots of sweets, you will grow a colony of sugar-loving organisms in your gut. What happens when you don't have sugar? Those organisms start starving off. They send a message to the brain. Hey, doesn't that candy bar sound good? Basically, they will trick your brain into thinking that you really, really need sugar. So I tell people, listen, when you think you're craving something, I mean, it's those maybe not so positive microbiota down in your gut that are doing all the talking for you. It's not a real craving, right? Uh-huh. So it's sometimes maybe helpful to understand that. But anyway, I 100% agree with you. How could you look in the mirror, see a black tie and not know that something was wrong, right?
Unbelievable, but interest. It's totally fascinating, and I think, yeah, with smoking, you're kind of polluting yourself internally and externally at the same time. Yeah, versus, you know, if you're eating fast food other than walking into a fast food place, which is kind of interesting because, you know, you do see a lot of teenagers with bad skin who work in a fast food place, and I think that probably is an internal and external, right, with all the grease in the air. And they don't cleanse their skin well, or they go to bed at night without washing their face. That I would imagine that contributes to you know, acne in teenagers or people who work in fast food places.
Yes. Oh, I absolutely agree. I had a friend in high school who worked in a McDonald's or something. And, you know, sometimes I go pick her up and I just looked at, well, both the people coming in and the folks working there, the young, you know, the teenagers, and the acne problems were horrible. And the customers were, you know, all obese. It's just a problem all over. You know, there have been, by the way, I mean, a lot of people know this, but there have been some studies now showing that obesity really is not such an overeating problem, but there are definitely changes in the microbiome or microbiome factors that contribute so significantly to obesity. And they've actually, you know, taken microbiota from obese people and done fecal transplants into mice, and the mice just blow up. They become fat. So there is something to that. You know, there have been actually a number of really interesting studies looking at overall health, aging with the microbiome, and effects on the skin, both in people and in mice, and in African turquoise killifish. In fact, there was kind of a fun study. There's a fish that has an average lifespan of about 8 months because it lives in a pond that dries up part of the year. It is called the African turquoise killifish. And apparently, even though it's a fish, it has a lot of parallels to humans. So some investigators actually took these fish and they did basically fecal transplants from young fish to old fish. And what they found, the older fish, actually, when they were transplanted with young fish microbiota, they lived 41% longer.
Whoa.
They started swimming around like young fish. They got all this, you know, energy. The fish skin got better. And conversely, if you took old fish and transplanted their microbiota into the young killifish, they actually had accelerated deterioration of the hyaluronic acid in their skin and inflammatory markers that were, basically less favorable. The study's been done with mice as well, where they've looked at inflammatory markers and effects on brain deterioration and retinal deterioration. So you can take basically old mice microbiota and accelerate inflammatory decline in a young mouse, take a young mouse and actually stave off some of the effects in an older mouse. So there is, back to the original observation of these patients who have this accelerated aging, there are some very concrete studies that have at least suggested that, you know, there are reasons. So I fully believe we're going to understand a lot more about how the microbiome can help us to, you know, maintain youthfulness, freshness, you know, good quality skin, good internal health, good brain function, good eye function, good everything function, right?
Fascinating. Let me ask you about supplements because, you talk about probiotics or prebiotics and how they affect the microbiome internally. And what about like vitamins and supplements? How do you feel about those?
There are some supplement talks. And I do personally take some supplements myself. I don't take any probiotic supplements. I always think that food sources, natural sources, are better than kind of unregulated, man-made supplements. There are some supplements that have, some items like pycnogenol, there have been some studies on that seem to improve, you know, skin and health. And yeah, this comes from the maritime pine bark tree, right? Or the pine tree, the bark from the bark. And I'm personally not eating pine bark these days. So I'd love to go to France and maybe I'd try some. But there do seem to be some benefits of that. I do think that nutrients without the good microbiota, without the substrates, the fiber and other micronutrients, these things all work in concert. So just taking supplements with a lousy diet, I think, is just useless.
Yes.
So unless you've got the good micronutrients, the fiber, all the other components that are so important, it's a complete waste of time and money.
Yeah. You know, and it sounds like really the true key is on the whole balanced life. So yes, you are sleeping well, being moderate with any vices you may have,
yes,
eat fresh foods as much as possible, you know, cut out fast food altogether, exercise, hang out with friends, you know, do things socially and with family, you know, and you keep that what we call a balanced life where you're kind of touching all those cornerstones, that should help us.
I absolutely agree. I guess the other thing that I think about with the blue zones,
yes,
in addition to all of that, I think another important component that's not discussed much is purpose. So all these blue zones, you know, people have purpose in their community. They do things that help other people.
Yes.
And purpose is, I think, very underappreciated. And I do think it's a key element of longevity and health span, good quality.
I agree, because we all need a reason to get out of bed every morning.
We do.
Something to look forward to, hope, you know, purpose. For those that struggle with finding purpose, because I do know people who really do struggle with finding purpose, any recommendations on, you know, how do you find your purpose?
How do you find your purpose? I'm not sure how that's on mine, but I feel like I have a lot of purpose. It's interesting. I was on a hike with a group, and this young priest was, you know, hiking with me, talking, and he asked what I did, and I said, I'm a dermatologist. He says, well, what you and I do is not so different. And I thought, nothing like a priest. And he says, you know, we're in fields that we help other people. And there is, you know, studies have shown that there is more satisfaction. And I think it goes back to that purpose. I think having, it doesn't have to be a job, but having some purpose that is contributing to the greater good, contributing to other people's wellness and quality of life, I think provides us with the most happiness. Mm-hmm. So what I would say is start with things that will help other people. I think that's a good focus generally. So if you don't have purpose, I mean, you know, volunteer.
Yes, yes.
Older folks home. I mean, make other people's lives happier and better. And the reward is it'll come back to you, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, just get involved with something, right? I mean, get involved with something that, you know, will bring you joy and maybe bring somebody else some joy. Or
yes,
sisters.
Change good microbiota from the skin.
Yeah.
It'll all be good, right?
Well, Serena, it's just been so amazing. I mean, all of it, we could go on for hours about this topic. I really think there's so much more. And like you said, you know, every day scientists are learning more and more about the microbiome. And hopefully, you know, eventually it will be something for, especially for the memory, you know, and the Alzheimer's crisis that we have and dementia. And I know we're making strides in those areas too, but you just mentioned the impact of the microbiome even on the mental health of a person and at that level. So It's wonderful. Is there anything we haven't discussed? Is there anything, you know, you really would like to kind of leave our audience with in terms of the whole beauty from the inside out and the importance of the microbiome?
Yes. I think we've discussed quite a lot, and this has been so much fun, and we could go on for hours. I would say that, you know, importantly, as a dermatologist, of course, I focus on the skin, but I would encourage other dermatologists, plastic surgeons, et cetera, to look at the person holistically. And we can, you know, we have so many fabulous tools that we can make people look better. Unless they truly are better with general good health practices, you know, none of us are skilled enough to kind of out inject or out surgery bad health habits. So I think it's just a good thing to incorporate into our practices, discussions we're fortunate enough to have time with our patients. We can educate them on, you know, external factors. I think we can educate them on internal factors and all these, quite frankly, very simple things to incorporate that will give people better quality of life. It will enhance, honestly, the effects of what we are doing to make them look better, because they will be better and they'll be more vibrant. They will be, I think, better, you know, human beings, and with better, you know, mental health. We like our patients to come back with better mental health. These are good people to be around. So it's there's kind of no reason not to incorporate this into our education for our patients.
And I think as well, like you, I mean, you know, a patient, you're a doctor. I mean, you're a dermatologist, but you're a medical doctor. And Yes. You instantly see the health of a patient when they walk in. And regardless of what type of a physician you are, you just know, well, yeah, they're presenting with what it is that concerns them. Well, you see the whole picture in front of you. And I think even at that point, you do know. And many just say, well, no, they just came in for one particular thing. And so that's what I'm going to treat. I'm not going to question anything else about their general health or their consumption or their exercise or their friendships. We don't go there with them. So, you know, maybe that is something that's great advice. It's really great advice to, you know, everybody out there. I did see an interesting Instagram ad recently, and he was a doctor, and he said when a patient, his advice to a patient was, when you go with a concern to a physician, you should be asking, the only question you should ask is why do I have this, not how do I treat this, like what, not, you know, but why do I have this? Because I think if you ask why, then the whole conversation of what do you eat? What's your stress levels? You know, what's your exercise? So it's like, you know, and really it's like, well, you have it because there's something off with you. So let's find that balance. I mean, would you agree with that?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And for so long, there were so many patients that asked, you know, why do I have this condition? And the answer was, we don't really know. Yes. And now I think with all this information, with the microbiome coming out, with it's all dysbiosis. You know, I think 100% of patients with metabolic disease have dysbiosis. And I think that patients who come in and they have a little rosacea on the chin, they have dysbiosis. So it can be very extreme. It can be a little more narrow. But we're understanding why, we're understanding the answer to why now a lot more. And I do agree 100%, always, always treat the root cause. So yeah, it works better, and it is better for patients if we treat the root cause.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, Serena, thank you so much for being on the Aesthetic Insider Show. I mean, this is amazing. It's great conversation. Hopefully we can you know, as more we learn more, we can revisit this conversation or some other beauty tips, beauty trends. I'd love to have you back as a guest on the show.